Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. There have been just a ton of upgrades going on pretty much all around the LQ network, so I just wanted to give a quick summary in case you missed anything. And I also posted most of these to the most recent community bulletin that went out last night, so if you got that, most of this will be a duplicate, but the number of people who listen to the podcast that aren't even members of the site are pretty high, so I think this is worth going through again. I'll start with the LQ Radio site, which was recently upgraded to the latest release of WordPress and also received a minor facelift design-wise while that was going on. Basically here there were numerous feature enhancements and bug fixes and really just a bunch of small things. Additionally though, we do plan to bring back the LQ Radio interview series in the very near future, and we actually already have some really great guests lined up for that. As I've previously announced a couple times, we've also expanded our OGG support. There's a full OGG feed now, so if you are looking for that, head over to radio.linuxquestions.org, and there's all the feeds on the right-hand side there. Next up is the LQ Wiki at wiki.linuxquestions.org that also received a code upgrade to the latest version, and with that a minor facelift. And once again here was numerous feature enhancements, bug fixes, and a roll-up of a bunch of small things. We're now only 9 articles away from our next goal of 3,000 articles. As I mentioned previously also, the site now accepts OpenID as a consumer. As I mentioned on the last podcast, LQISO at iso.linuxquestions.org has now facilitated over 3 million downloads. LQ Screenshots at shots.linuxquestions.org continues to grow very rapidly, and we're regularly adding new content to the site, so if you haven't been there in a little while, make sure to head over and view the latest distribution screenshots. Moving on to the main site, the tutorials, articles, and blog sections all recently received a code upgrade, and once again, this is minor new features. In this case, there was quite a few usability enhancements, and of course, bug fixes. We do plan on significantly expanding these original and also user-generated content sections this year. And lastly, my blog over at jeremy.linuxquestions.org was just migrated from the previous platform over to WordPress, and it always kind of really bothered me that my blog itself wasn't on open source software. I'd started it a long time ago and just set it up with something that was quick and easy at the time, and finally had a chance to move that over. There were a couple of hiccups with the export format of the previous platform, so I kind of did a bare minimal theme and bare minimal features for now, and as I'm comfortable with how it's stabilizing, I will be adding features and widgets and a couple things, say, over the next week or so. So as you can see, we've been quite busy the last few weeks, and all of these things happened in the last 3 weeks or so. In the coming weeks, or maybe even the coming month, I'm also happy to announce that the main forums will be receiving a code upgrade that I promised for a while now. Once that's done, we'll work through the backlog of feature requests that we've gotten, and at this point, there's just been a ton of good features that have been requested that we haven't had time to implement, and we will have time to get to those at that point. But if you have a suggestion for a new feature, or really even a new site, please don't hesitate to let us know. I'd like to take this time to once again thank each and every LQ member for making the site what I think is one of the premier open source resources available on the web. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is a follow-up to the Is Enterprise DB an Open Source Company that I covered in the last podcast. The topic from that podcast really sparked a debate across the blogosphere, at least the open source blogosphere. I'd say it's certainly a somewhat complicated issue with nuances that people interpret differently across licenses and across a whole variety of different things, especially at the edge cases. For my part, I still think coming up with a solid category name for this may help to alleviate at least some of the debate a bit, but I really have not been able to come up with a name that I like. While I can see that a company like Enterprise DB is not what Matt Acey is calling open source bona fide, they really can't be considered proprietary bona fide, at least in my opinion. Andy Astor, who's the CEO of Enterprise DB, suggested open source based, but that doesn't put things across in the clear, succinct manner that I'd personally like. Based can just mean so many different things. So for those listeners, do anyone have any ideas? In the end, I'd agree with what most people think, and that's this is an important discussion, and it is something worth discussing. And as I've said before numerous times, consumers in the IT space are getting more and more educated and more demanding, and I mean that in a good way, and this is happening by the day. I think a new dawn really is rising. And if you are even considering selling into the enterprise space or even the greater IT space, I hope you realize that this matters a whole lot. And I have to say, I look forward to discussing some of these issues at the upcoming OSBC, which I'll be attending and LQ is a sponsor of. The next story I have is if you can't beat them, fine them. The EU's wrong policy on Microsoft. Well, I've talked about and agreed with many of the decisions the EU has made with respect to Microsoft. I have to admit that I don't agree with this one. And this is a quote from a Wall Street Journal article. Quote, "The antitrust chief for the European Commission tried again last week to show Microsoft Corp who's boss. She declared that the software giant is overcharging other companies for access to technology that, in her opinion, doesn't represent significant innovation and threatened another massive fine. Perhaps 1 billion euros or more. Ms. Crowe's new assertion of power to assess innovation and to regulate its pricing should get the attention of businesses everywhere. When government officials feel comfortable second-guessing markets on such decisions, no business is safe and no property rights secure." End quote. From my perspective, things like this should indeed be decided by the markets, not by the governments and not by courts. When a monopoly abuses its power, that's one thing. In some situations like that, really, in the end, the court or the government, along with the court, is the only one who has enough leverage to actually legitimately remedy things. I don't think anyone, and this is be they open source proponents or proprietary vendors, want courts and judges deciding what significant innovation is and then what value should be placed on any innovation. So we'll really have to see how this plays out. It has sparked quite a bit of debate all around the internet, though, and just to clarify my view a little bit, I have no issue with most of what the EU has been able to accomplish with respect to Microsoft, and they were definitely abusing a monopoly position. I don't think anyone argues with that. And in fact, I've given them kudos in the past for stepping up and taking a stand where the U.S. Department of Justice really failed after all the work that the DOJ put in. With the change of administration and a lot of other political things, in the end, there really was no legitimate remedy, in my opinion. What scares me specifically here is the possibility of a government or government agency being able to assign a value to what it perceives to be innovation, or to say it perceives something as not being innovation. And the reason for that is even if they are correct in this particular case, it just seems like a really bad precedent to set. Keeping it in the EU, the next story I have is the Tory party promises an open source Britain if elected. Matthew Aslett pointed this out, and in reality here, politicians are leveraging open source in their campaigns. And this runs directly contrary to the potential fantasy that Mr. Enderley cooked up, and this is something I didn't include in the podcast at all, but if you go to my blog, there was an article about the interesting fantasy, let's say, that Rob Enderley had cooked up about the potentials of open source in government. It's a pretty interesting read if you head over to my blog. And here's a quote from the article from CBR. Quote, "Conservative Shadow Chancellor George Osborne has promised that an incoming Conservative government would create a level playing field for open source software in the UK, in a move which could save taxpayers more than £600 million a year. Incredible scenes, as Glenn Moody has noted. According to a speech made by Osborne at the Royal Society of the Arts, what it is about is better and more effective government. The problem is that the cultural change has not taken place in government. There isn't a level playing field for open source software. As it stands, too many companies are frozen out of government IT contracts, stifling competition and driving up costs. Taking into account the experience of companies and public sector bodies, it is estimated that the government could save at least 5% of its annual IT bill if more open source software was used as part of a more effective procurement strategy. That adds up to over £600 million a year. The internet age is transforming politics and has the capacity to transform government. Let's start being open source right now." Osborne also announced the appointment of Mark Thompson of the Judge Business School at Cambridge University to advise the party on how to make Britain the open source leader in Europe. End quote. Now, obviously here, with this being an open election, there's no guarantee that the party will win. And in reality, I'm not too familiar with British politics, but a cursory glance shows that they haven't won in well over a decade, so it's less than a certainty, obviously. And with the current situation, it's my understanding that the election might not even take place till as late as 2010. But the fact that open source has now made it into political campaigns is a clear indication of just how mainstream and accepted open source is. If you're still blindly fighting it, and I'd like to clarify that blindly fighting it is much different than wholesale agreeing with it, or even agreeing with it at all, you really are fighting a rising tide. I had a couple more stories left. As you can probably tell, though, my voice is starting to give out. The weather here in New York has been pretty crazy, and so with that, I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, so I'm just going to do one more story for now. So the last story I have is, if you're going to steal software, steal from us. And that's from a Microsoft exec. And this is from an article that was recently in Information Week. Quote, if you're going to be a software counterfeiter, then please copy and illegally use Microsoft products. The above plea isn't from a posting on a hacker forum. Rather, it's how Microsoft Business Group President Jeff Rakes feels about software counterfeiters. If they are going to pirate somebody, we want it to be us rather than somebody else, Rakes said. But Rakes, speaking last week at the Morgan Stanley Technology Conference in San Francisco, said a certain amount of software piracy actually helps Microsoft because it can lead to purchases by individuals who otherwise might never have been exposed to the company's products. We understand that in the long run, the fundamental asset is the installed base of people who are using our products, Rakes said. What you hope to do over time is convert them to licensing the software. End quote. Now when you think about it, that sounds suspiciously like the business model of most open source companies, doesn't it? It's just that we don't call it piracy. Companies, and I'll take, let's say, MySQL AB as a specific example, thrive on having absolutely massive install bases. They have these millions and millions of installs precisely because of the gratis and also Libre nature of their products. It's then their responsibility to offer enough value to incent some amount of those downloaders to become consumers and purchase products or services from the company. Now, the business models vary greatly, and for some companies it might be support, for others it might be certification and official binaries. It could be things like being able to use the product in a commercial environment, which is typically paying out of the GPL. Could be extra features, it could be myriad things, or in many cases, a combination of a bunch of those things. The point is, though, there's additional value for the consumer. Things aren't based on lock-in or coercion or anything except for you wanting the product so bad that you'd like to pay for it. The funny thing about this story, kind of to me, is in the early days, in let's say Windows 3.1 and earlier, Microsoft actually seemed to really embrace piracy. They kind of knew this was their way in, and it seems like things might have come full circle. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.